Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I would like to thank you people so much for staying on, and not only just staying on this program, but supporting us and praying for us, because some of the things we go through, it couldn't be gotten through without divine intervention. And I've told all of our beloved family that, and I want to be too dramatic, but I was really pretty concerned about that having a bleed, because one of my best friends going all the way through 1963 died from a bleed. An intestinal bleed. He really did. And and the signs and symptoms, some of the signs and symptoms were there. You never know. It could be a heart thing. So I thought, well, hell, I'm going to get checked out. Boy, I was there forever and a day. But I told all y'all that the first hour. But anyway, I hope y'all enjoyed the first 2 hours. We flew by the seat of our pants. But I think we really did a great job. I think we did. I think we fulfilled our mission statement. If you go back and look at our website, and protecting, we're trying to fight for our precious white people. Not just the United States, not just Tennessee, but worldwide, because we are most certainly under attack. It's genocide from the being perpetrated by devils, by the devil's office of corps, a.k.a. the Jew. But now we're shifting gears. Thank God the bitter ender's coming on here. And he always does a marvelous, marvelous job. I love him like a brother, just like I love little Izzy and Jason. I'm just a paternal type dude, man. I love my people. even though the bitter ender cost us a fortune, tearing our damn swords up all the time, man. But anyway, bitter ender, I think we're going to do. You said something about I forgot now. You told me. I forgot already. Go ahead, bitter ender.
Well, I was going to show videos of my famous vacation to Disney World. I thought that would just fascinate our audience tonight.
No,
I
wouldn't
pull that
on
my worst enemies. No, we're going to talk about two speeches. And one was a speech and one was a well-written, very heartfelt, emotional speech or item that was issued. And compare the two and look at it. And I thought this might be a good one for this week, because all this last week we've heard a lot of speeches, and thank goodness we've heard them from President Trump and not new President Kamala Harris, or hope Joe will just shut up and ride off into the sunset or go fix his car back in Delaware or something, and we don't have to listen to him anymore. So, but we've got two that we're going to talk about here tonight. And kind of compare the difference, and one of them we're going to kind of tear to pieces, and then let you hear the other one and see what a difference in these two people they really were that gave these two talks. Going back in a little history of my early life, and I hope this doesn't put all our listeners to sleep, but when I was in the fifth grade, well, earlier in school, you had to memorize the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag and the Star-Spangled Banner and, you know, that sort of thing. And then when I was in the fifth grade, one of the assignments we had was to memorize Lincoln's Gettysburg Address.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yep.
And it was just in the book, I guess it's a suggestion, and the teacher couldn't think up anything else. So that was an assignment, a memory, and it's training, you know, how to memorize things. I understand that. But Mrs. Williams, as our teacher, just was a really sweet Southern lady, and from Williamson County, just outside of Nashville. She's a country gal, and she talked about a lot of times she was late for school one morning because the cows got out. She had to drive the cows back through the gate and back into the field. And I don't know that she really believed this with the Gettysburg Address, but that was the assignment in the social studies book for fifth graders, and she went along with it. So I've always thought down through the years, and I've memorized it too, I guess, you know, that's what we were supposed to do. And I didn't think very highly of Lincoln, but, you know, I didn't know all the bad stuff until I started reading people like Donnie and Ronnie Kennedy and Mike Grissom, you know, Southern by the Grace of God and the Kennedys, yes. The South was right. And then Charles Adams, When in the Course of Human Events. And I would recommend that book to our listeners. If you ever get a copy of that and you want to see how slavery as a cause in the war was refuted by Charles Adams, who's a New Yorker, and he was getting ready to write the obligatory book about trash in the South, and it was slavery. And he's an oddity, an honest Yankee, that did this research, and it didn't take him long to say, heck no, it was about money. And he really lays it on the line about what Lincoln said about when the Southern states left, what am I going to do about my taxes or tariffs? And, you know, Lincoln even admitted he needed to start a war and he needed to back the South into a corner and make them fire the first shot. So then he would have an excuse to invade the South and he could whip up all this anti-South sentiment in the North, you know, and wave the flag and get all the patriots out there and have them, you know, enlist in the army and go teach those Southern rats a lesson. So, but I didn't know all that back then. I didn't know all that back then. So if I had to do that same Lincoln's Gettysburg Address today, I would do a sentence and say, no, this isn't right. This is what he actually said. This is what he actually believed. And so on down through and just pick the whole thing apart. So I thought that might be fun for our listeners today, that I am going to give the Lincoln Gettysburg Address,
yes, sir,
delivered on the Gettysburg battlefield by President Abraham Lincoln. And I'll even do it in my speechifying voice here. So my mother, and you know, went along with it, and she had me, you know, go over it till I could recite it back. But I always remember my mother and my grandmother. And this was in the 1950s. This is almost 100 years after the war. Neither one of those ladies said President Lincoln or Abraham Lincoln. It was always that old Lincoln. That old Lincoln did this, and that old Lincoln did that. And I knew from my mother's tone that was not a good person.
No.
Because she wouldn't say a bad thing about anybody, but she didn't have much good to say about Lincoln. So anyway, so here we go with Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. 87 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. No, Lincoln didn't believe that. Lincoln said that blacks are an inferior race, and he didn't want to have anything to do with them. He wanted to abolish slavery just to get the blacks out of this country and off this North American continent, or at least out of the United States. And he wanted all blacks, slaves and free blacks, sent back to Africa. And he said that many occasions. In fact, right toward the end of the war, he was asking the U.S. Secretary of the Navy, Gideon Welles, he said, well, the war looks like it's kind of winding down. We've got most of the southern ports blockaded. A lot of them have been taken over by the federal army coming from the land side, and they've captured, you know, Charleston and Savannah and New Orleans and Mobile. About the only port that was left open was Wilmington. He said, do we have enough ships now to start rounding up these blacks from all these contraband camps where they, when the federal army came through the South, all these blacks ran away, and a lot of them did, and tagged along with the U.S. Army, which the U.S. Army hated. They didn't want to have to feed them. They didn't want to have to fool with them. They thought they were a bunch of thieves stealing stuff at night from the camps.
What made them think that, I wonder?
I do not know. They must have had a preview of our morning news reports on all the local stations.
Yes.
And and Sherman, there were so many following Sherman's army as they turned north through Georgia and on up into the Carolinas, that he actually got his men to cross this bridge over one of the rivers and had them standing there with bayonets and poking the blacks that were trying to follow after Sherman's army, and then set fire to the bridge and burned it so they couldn't get across this river. And here the Confederates closing in from behind them, Sherman's men just burned the bridge so they couldn't get across the river. All right, he didn't want to fool with it. So that thing about Lincoln and all men are created equal was just nonsense. And he wanted the blacks shipped back to Africa or to an island in the Caribbean. And he even said the Western territories are for the white man. So he didn't want blacks moving into Kansas or Montana or the Dakotas. He didn't want them out there. He wanted those states reserved for white immigrants to move out of the Midwest or wherever. Well, the Midwest. They didn't want Southerners out there either, because they were afraid Southerners would vote Democratic, and that would upset the power that they had in Congress with a Republican communist dominated Congress by the communist Republicans back then. And what we have to remember, back in those days, the Republican Party was not the conservative party. The Democrat Party was the conservative party, even in the North. And the radicals, the wackos that had the real screwball ideas and had all the fringe elements in their party was the Republican Party. And, you know, that was why they put the boot heel on the Southerners' neck after the war and just ground our face down into the dirt for 12 years doing so-called Reconstruction. But it's actually redestruction. So after the break, we'll get back to some more quotes from President Abraham Lincoln.
I thought for sure that was Abraham Lincoln talking. Be right back, folks.
Bypass the mainstream narrative with Liberty News Radio at libertynewsradio.com. Engage with charismatic hosts live or on demand. We cover the crucial news focused on God, family, and country. News that other networks simply refuse to use. Think of LNR as hard-hitting news and podcasts at your fingertips, anytime, anywhere. Join us at libertynewsradio.com. Empower your day with the truth, because the truth will set you free. libertynewsradio.com.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
Introducing Managed IT Services from NPI. We offer top-notch data backup and recovery, email spam protection, and network security tailored to your needs and budget. With 20-plus years of experience in the medical field, our HIPAA-certified consultants know what it takes to protect sensitive information. Don't settle for less. Give us a call at 801-706-6980 and experience the difference with Managed IT Services. Remember, your IT support should be fast, efficient, and reliable.
Dear Blood River Radio family, we're going to go back to his pious, his the saint, Abraham Lincoln. I've kind of worshiped that man. Go ahead, Abe.
Saint Abraham the pious. Here we go. So we were talking about Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. I think it was 309 North Main Street. Well, no, wait a minute. That's another one. That's where they kept all the prostitutes. Anyway, no.
Well, that's where he hung out.
We're kind of picking it apart line by line. So we talked about that 47 years ago, and all men are created equal, and Lincoln didn't believe blacks were equal. He called them an inferior race, and he wanted them shipped back to Africa or an island in the Caribbean. And then he goes on and says, now we are engaged in a great civil war. No, wrong, Abe. It wasn't a civil war. If you look up civil war in any dictionary of your choice, it's going to say it's a war fought between two factions in a country, in one country. And that wasn't the case. The United States invaded a free, sovereign, independent nation, the Confederate States of America. So that blew that definition right out of the water. And then the second part of the definition of a civil war, they say it was two groups within one country. And then the second part, fighting for the control of the government of that country. And okay, the English Civil War, the Cavaliers and the Roundheads, that was a civil war, and the winners took over the crown of England and ruling England. The Spanish Civil War in the late 1930s between Franco and the fascists and the communists, that was a civil war because the fascists won and Franco took over the government in Spain. But this was not a civil war. It was a war to suppress Southern independence, and that is not a civil war. And there was no attempt by the Confederacy to take over the government in Washington. And that's what a real civil war would be if the South rose up, defeated the federal armies, marched into Washington, took over it, said, okay, they're gone, we're in charge now, the whole United States, the whole shooting match. That would have been a civil war. But that was never the intent of the Confederacy. All they wanted to do was leave. And Jefferson Davis stated that. He said, we seek no conquest nor aggrandizement. All we ask is to be left alone. And so Lincoln wasn't about to let that happen because the South had the money. And when the Southern states left, then that meant there went all his taxes to prop his government up because the South was so heavily taxed on imports or tariffs or taxes, whatever you want to call it. And the federal budget back in 1860, and I've heard two or three statements on what it was, somewhere between $102 and $106 million for the entire year for the federal government. Now, we laugh at that today because they blow that off in lunchtime in Washington today. But that was a lot of money back then. But say it was $102 million. Out of that, the South was paying $82 million to prop up the federal government. So when those Southern states left, there went the golden goose that was keeping the federal government in business. So that's why he had to have a war. But it was not a civil war. And then he goes on to say, testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure. So what was the bad thing about the South leaving other than the money? People in the North, a lot of them, the real loudmouths, hated the South. They thought Southerners were lazy. They thought they were an inbred bunch of morons. They trash the South every chance they get, which is what they do on television today and in the movies. Some things never change. And so to get rid of the Southern states, a lot of the people in the North said, good, great. We don't want them a part of the great, glorious United States, the shining city on the hill. And then it's being drugged down by the example of these lazy Southerners that sit around and drink all day on their plantations and have blacks do all the work for them. I guess they never heard about the yeoman farmers out cutting down the forest and clearing the land and doing all the things that they had to do to build a farm. So that they were glad to get rid of the South. And so why couldn't the 22 states that were left in the Union manage themselves without the South? Why did they even need the South? You know, they claimed that how brilliant everybody in Boston and Philadelphia and New York, and this was the capital of the financial district, and it was the hub of the nation, and it set all the great examples of Longfellow and Thoreau and all of these brilliant thinkers. And, you know, they didn't think the Southerners, most of the Southerners, could even read and write, but much less all these fancy novels that they came out with. So why would they be so worried about the South leaving? Well, once again, it goes back to money. And most wars are fought over money. Since way back when Ugog hit Magog over the head with a dinosaur bone out in front of the cave, from then on, it was still about money. So that was another lie that he had in that. And then he goes on to say, we're met on a great battlefield of that war. And Lincoln always wanted a big victory to emphasize his pronouncements. It wasn't a great victory for the North, but at least it stopped Lee's invasion of the North at Sharpsburg, Maryland, in September of 1862. So he had already written out this Emancipation Proclamation that was going to free all the slaves. And while they were losing at the 7 days and Second Manassas and Jackson's Valley Campaign, where they thought Stonewall Jackson was going to be marching down Pennsylvania Avenue and burn down the White House at any minute, it looked kind of foolish to issue this great proclamation when you were running for your life and in your underwear and running out of D.C. to get away from the Confederates coming into town. So he had to wait for some victory, and Sharpsburg wasn't really that much of a victory. It was more of a draw, but after a day of after the bloody fighting there, that was the bloodiest single day in American military history. It's at Sharpsburg, Maryland. And the Yankees call it Antietam, but we call it Sharpsburg. In one day's battle. And Gettysburg cost more lives and more casualties, but that was a three-day battle. So after staring at each other for a day, then Lincoln that – I mean, Lee that night – oh, gosh. Mixed up Lee with Lincoln. I'll be struck down by lightning probably in the morning sometime.
Yep.
But that night, Lee pulled the Army of the Northern Virginia back across the Potomac River and escaped with all the soldiers back into Virginia. So then he said he was issuing his Emancipation Proclamation, that all the slaves were going to be free. And even now, even the so-called historians and newscasters talk about Lincoln freeing the slaves. Well, it didn't. The Emancipation didn't free any slaves. It said it applied only to those states in rebellion against the Union. And most of these people that are Lincoln supporters, even conservatives like Bill O'Reilly and the late Rush Limbaugh and even Tucker Carlson, they don't really understand what history really happened back then. And they call the Republican Party the Party of Lincoln, which is, I think, is a horrible thing to call your party. Might as well call it the Party of Stalin or Mao Zedong or something like, or Satan. But, you know, anyway, so the Emancipation actually said, and they've never read it, it applies only to those states in rebellion against the Union where Lincoln had no power. And the five states that were still in the Union, like Delaware, like West Virginia, like Maryland, it didn't apply to them. But
what a crock.
Slavery, the slavery was still legal in the states that were still in the Union. It only applied to those states that were out of the Union. So it'd be like Trump today issuing an executive order for something in North Korea. And they tell him, oh, you go away, yellow hair. You don't bother us here in North Korea. You stay away from us. So that was the same thing back then. And the whole idea behind it was not to free the slaves. Like I said, Lincoln didn't get a rat's rear end about the blacks. If they were freed, he was going to round them up and ship them all back to Africa. The whole idea was it was a political ploy. They wanted to say that we, the Northern Yankee government, was fighting to free the slaves, which meant that the South, since they were opposing the Federal Army, the South must be fighting to keep the slaves. Which we weren't, but that's what it says. When we're for this, then they must be against it. So the whole point was to keep England and France out of the war on the side of the Confederacy. Lincoln did not want another American Revolution where Washington and the Continental Army were just getting the living daylights beaten out of them most every battle they fought until France jumped in there and started sending their fleet over here and their troops and their money and everything to support the American Revolution. It was France that won our independence. And because in the northern colonies, the Continental Army was beaten just about the time every time they came up against the British. And so France was the one that blockaded Yorktown and sent troops to reinforce Washington's army and forced the British to surrender at Yorktown. Without the French, we would probably be still part of the British Empire right now. So that's what Lincoln didn't want. He didn't want a powerful British Navy helping the Confederacy out and breaking the blockade. So the idea was that we'll say we're fighting to free the slaves, and that must mean that the other guys are the bad guys, and they must be fighting to keep them slave, which we weren't. We just wanted to get away from the Lincoln government. And the other thing they wanted with that emancipation, they were hoping that the word would get out in the South and that the slaves would rise up in revolt and start murdering white women and children that were left behind while their husbands and fathers and brothers were off fighting somewhere off way off in Virginia. And they were left there on the farms alone by themselves, and the blacks were going to massacre them, just like what had happened on Haiti, where
yes,
the blacks chased down the women and children. And the whites were run up into the hills and into the mountains, and the blacks came after them and literally chopped them to pieces with axes and machetes. And they were hoping that that would start in the South, and then they would have desertions from the Confederate Army because these boys had to go back home and protect their families from these wild blacks that were just massacring the white women and children that were left behind. It never happened. In fact, the blacks actually defended some of the white homes when the Yankee Army came through. So that was the point of the emancipation. We'll continue after the break.
Yes, sir. Can't wait, Gene. Be right back, folks.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Jason Walker. In Las Vegas today, President Trump continuing a very busy schedule, reaffirming a number of campaign promises.
Under our leadership, we're going to defeat inflation, bring down prices. We're going to raise those wages. They're going to go up. They're going to go up. Put more money in your pocket, secure our borders, restore law and order to our cities, and we're going to make America great again.
The Senate has voted to confirm Pete Hegseth as Defense Secretary.
Hegseth now takes on the role of helping fulfill President Trump's vision of making America strong again. The decorated war veteran says he sees himself as a change agent, one who will restore what he calls a warrior culture at the Pentagon. Hegseth said during his recent confirmation hearings, quote, "It's time to give someone with dust on his boots the helm." Bob Agnew reporting.
Senate has given a green light to Kristi Noem as Homeland Security Secretary. That puts her in charge of the agency that's essential to national security. Also at townhall.com, Donald Trump pumping coal as an answer to AI power needs.
President Trump's return to office could bring some temporary relief to the beleaguered U.S. coal industry. The president suggested coal can be counted on to help meet surging electricity demand to power manufacturing and the massive data centers needed for artificial intelligence. The country has vast reserves of coal, much of it belonging to the federal government and extracted at vast mines in Wyoming and Montana. Even so, coal has been losing ground to cheaper natural gas and renewable energy for years. Analysts say power demand and less environmental regulation under Trump could help delay some coal plant retirements. Ron Taylor reporting.
A big homecoming today for four female Israeli soldiers. They were given back to Israel by Hamas. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Right now with an important alert. Home title fraud is one of the fastest growing white collar crimes in the country. Criminals can make millions on your house without you even knowing it. Michael, you were one of those criminals?
Yeah, that's right. I was responsible for about $16 million in equity theft and title fraud.
Wow.
And to be honest, it was easy to do. It's just paperwork. So by the time you find out what's happening, the equity in your home is already gone.
So how do you keep your property and equity safe? For more, here's Action News reporter Ron Stevens.
Well, Monica, an in-depth investigation found there's actually just one company that prevents this type of crime from happening. Equity Protect. Equity Protect scans, monitors, alerts, and most importantly, protects you from any attempts to tamper with or steal your home equity and ownership 24 hours a day. Other companies merely monitor. Equity Protect stops the crime from happening. Find out if you're already a victim or take a free risk assessment today at EquityProtect.com. That's EquityProtect.com.
Hello, friends. This is Jacob from Blood River Radio. We call the kings into account and tell the truth to shame the devil on this show every week because we are of the firm conviction that our cause cannot succeed without true revival amongst the remnant, amongst that principled minority of the dispossessed majority. Now is the time to stand and be counted, to do like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who would not bow down to the false idols of their day, even under pain of death, like the 300 mighty men of valor who surrounded the Midianites with Gideon, or the 7,000 men that God told the prophet Elijah had not bowed their knees to Baal in a time when even calling fire down from heaven would not awaken our kinsmen from their slumber. If you are encouraged by our labors in the trenches for the kingdom and the cause of truth, liberty, and righteousness, I urge you to consider supporting this program. No donation is too small. We can do with thousands or even hundreds what our enemies and the powers and the principalities of this present darkness need tens of millions to do. So please donate today at BloodRiverRadio.com and help us take up the hedge and stand in the gap against the great evils of our time.
Introducing PrepStartsNow.com, your ultimate guide to readiness and peace of mind. We offer practical preparedness tools, training, and education to take your family's household readiness to the next level. Browse the prep shop for essential products, check out our planning guides, and stay informed with our prep blog. Visit PrepStartsNow.com and subscribe to our emails for exclusive offers, new products, and future events. Remember, preparedness begins with PrepStartsNow.com.
Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at CSPOA.org. That's CSPOA.org.
A Bienus is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Well, dear people, we're going to go right back to the Bender Leadership stuff. He's doing, carrying on what he does best. He's carrying on his, he's got his professor hat on tonight. He took his soldier hat off. He took his soldier suit off. He quit killing Yankees long enough to come in and finish this job on instructing you on a college level. So go right back, Bitter Ender.
Okay, so we were taking Lincoln's Gettysburg Address apart, and we got about three more sentences we're going to cover. He says that that we highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain. Talk about the Union soldiers that died, not the Confederates. You know, they were just scum of the earth. And of course, the Union soldiers, were by this time, 1863, they're mostly conscripts. The glorious war that was supposed to be over in less than a month was dragging on into its third year. And so they had to go to the draft, or conscript, as they called it back then. And that summer of 1863, when the Battle of Gettysburg was fought, there were draft riots in the North. The biggest one, of course, being in New York City. And that movie, The Gangs of New York, that Leonardo DiCaprio played in, that was pretty accurate right at the end of it. The draft rioters attacked the draft offices first, then the police stations, then they broke into an armory, armed themselves, and they were getting up on buildings in New York and shooting the police because the thing was so unfair. If you had $300, you could pay $300 and get out of the draft. Well, to an Irish working man, working stiff on the docks or in a factory, $300 would be like $3 million today. There's no way they could pay that. So it was a way for the rich to get out of serving in the army, but the poor had to go and fight and get killed, and especially the Irish. And what they were doing, they're bringing boatloads of the Irish over here to fill up the ranks of the Yankee army, because the white Northerners, once their initial enlistment was up, they said, we're not going back in this thing again. Those rebels can shoot, and they can shoot straight. And we've had enough of that. And then especially after Lincoln, January 1, 1863, that's when the emancipation went into effect. And when it did, there were a lot of northern regiments in the northern U.S. Army that simply deserted. They just threw down their rifles and walked home, said, we're not fighting for a bunch of niggers. And it wasn't blacks, it wasn't African Americans, it wasn't people of color. They just said, we're not fighting for a bunch of damn niggers. And they went home. And they that's why they had to have the draft and bring in the Irish and fill up the ranks. Not only that, they had butchers for officers in the Yankee Army. And one of the worst was Grant at Cold Harbor in Virginia. He attacked against fortified Confederate positions in sort of a concave shape and just fed his men in there to the meat grinder, lost over 7,000 casualties in about 30 minutes.
Damn.
And Grant would not call for a flag of truce to remove the wounded because that would signal that he had lost, and he didn't want to admit that he had lost to Lee in the Army of Northern Virginia. So he left these wounded Federal soldiers out there on the field for 3 days, and the Confederates said it was as bad on them as it was on the Federal Army because they could hear all these cries for help out there between the lines, and at night they could hear these poor guys moaning from these horrible wounds that they were suffering for. And Confederates couldn't take it anymore, and some of them would jump over the Confederate earthworks and go out there with a canteen or extra bandages and try to help somebody. And the Yankees were ordered back in their lines across the field behind their earthworks to shoot the Confederates that were coming out there to try to help the Union wounded. So they had to scurry back and get back over the earthworks and hang out in their lines. And they said each night that out there on the battlefield at Cold Harbor, the cries of the wounded were fewer and fewer. Of course, more and more of them were dying without any medical attention. Finally, on the third day, Grant agreed to a truce, and they got what few were left out there, they got them hauled out. So anyway, that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation under God, now Lincoln was never a church member, and he never had any ties to an organized religion. In fact, when he was in Congress and as a younger man, he made fun of Christians and people that were churchy people, and he had, you know, very little respect for them. But in his speeches, he always threw God's name in there to make the sound, to make the speech sound like it was more important, and it was, from a providential aspect of God was on our side. And so how can we lose if God's on our side and the other people are devil worshipers down there in the South? But he was not a really Christian, devout Christian person, but it sounded good in the speech. And then he winds up with, "And shall this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth." But not government of Southern people, by Southern people, or for Southern people. You try that, and we'll invade your country, and we'll kill over 68,000 of your soldiers, and probably throw in another 5,000 to 8,000 civilians that were deliberately murdered by the federal army. And that wasn't just collateral damage, like an artillery shell fell short and hit a civilian's home. They went out and murdered civilians. And they tried to enact a war or prosecute a war that would starve the Southern civilians, that they would go into the homes. Well, first of all, they go into the homes to steal anything of value, jewelry, gilded picture frames, silver service, silverware, silver pitchers, anything like that, steal anything of value, and then burn the home down. And that's why, looking at all these photographs and news clips and things they've been showing us of these fires out in California, they're talking about how terrible it was and, oh, it's awful, and we've never gone through anything like this. And I go, oh, nay, we have gone through this. Look at the pictures of Southern cities like Atlanta and like Columbia, South Carolina, and Richmond, what those cities look like after the Yankee Army came through. It looks exactly like these scenes we're seeing today from Pacific Palisades and Malibu and these cities out there in California. Only thing left standing were the chimneys. That's it, because they were brick or stone chimneys. The rest of the buildings in the South mostly were wood and just burned out. The food was stolen. The other thing the wonderful Yankee Army would do, they would take manure out of the stables and dump it down the wells, which meant the water was poisoned. And if you drink that, you're going to get cholera. And it wasn't something you couldn't, turn on the faucet and run all this poison water out of the well. It took a long, long time to get the poison out of that well where you could ever drink it again without becoming violently ill. Then they would take the salt out of these big salt boxes in the smokehouses, because back then didn't have refrigeration. So when you butchered hogs, you would cut them up, the ham, shoulder, ribs, whatever, bacon, and pack it in salt for a certain time period to keep it from spoiling. And then you could either smoke it, hang it up in the smokehouse, and build a small fire at the bottom and, get the flavor of hickory smoked meat. But they take the salt and spread it out in the fields, which meant you couldn't grow anything in that field. Salt would kill the vegetation. So this was how they made sure there was no government of the people, by the people, or for Southern people. It was a brutal type of war waged against civilians. But now we think about, but the news media and the general public thinks about this great benevolent president, and he's got his head carved on Mount Rushmore and all of these things like that. And they even built a pagan temple for him on the mall in D.C. And it does. It looks like, yes, a pagan temple. And he's sitting there on his throne glaring down at all of us mere peasants that are groveling around on the ground, and like some kind of Roman god on his throne. And I say, well, yeah, he looks like a Roman god, like the Roman god Bull Crapus Maximus, the Roman god of lies and misinformation. So I've seen the Lincoln Memorial from outside. I've never wanted to go in there. I was afraid I'd catch some kind of disease to get it on me. But when I've been to D.C. to see the sights up there. So that was Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. And, you know, like I said, even when I was in the fifth grade, we had to memorize that. I'm sure a lot of people have had to do that when they're in school. And probably a lot of historians have said Lincoln probably didn't write that. He may have made a few notes and said something similar to that, but the polished version that we get that has come down through the years was probably written by somebody on his staff or some lawyer or someone else that corrected a lot of the grammar and got it finished off and set up for us to have to memorize. So we just want to try to give people factual information and let them know what propaganda looks like. And Dr. Goebbels in Germany said, a lie told once is always a lie, but a lie told 1,000 times becomes history.
I'll tell you what, Jim, if we're going to break the pure evil of people like Grant and Sherman, just I still can't get over that. I'm still bitter about that. Anyway, people, we'll be back to our last segment of the last hour of Blood River Radio. I'll be right back, folks.
Do you know what is great about America? Ask an immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
This is Attorney Jason Robb, General Counsel of the Knights Party based out of Harrison, Arkansas, and proud supporter of Blood River Radio. I, like you, am concerned about the destruction of our beloved America and our racial kindred people and our cherished liberties. As an individual and as a nation, liberty is what we seek. Liberty is important. It is what allows us to be independent, and if properly used, liberty allows us to fully worship God in all areas of life. And with that worship comes more liberty. We are on the verge of anarchy in this country, and personal liberty is looked upon as a crowning achievement of the people. However, Christianity and white law and war is viewed as the enemy of this newfound freedom, and that is why it is under attack. Learn more by listening to Blood River Radio every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m.
In the medical field, IT security is crucial. Our highly skilled consultants are HIPAA certified and have 20 plus years of experience servicing medical clinics, billing and supply companies. We offer comprehensive endpoint protection, guarding your computers and servers against all stages of threats. And with our 24/7 monitoring services, you'll never worry about extensive downtime again. Ready to level up your IT support? Call 801-706-6980 today and discover how great IT services can be with Managed IT Services.
Blood Group Radio family, boy, this hour has really gone. This whole program, even with all the difficulties we had in the beginning that we overcame, we always do, thank God, with people like Jay and Miss Teenage America and God Almighty, it's has gone so fast. I can truthfully tell you, I enjoyed even the part when I didn't know if we were going to be able to go out or not, because I always love a challenge. For some reason, I'm a disorganized person. I've always, maybe because of the way I was raised, I never knew where we were going to move next, never knew where the next meal was coming from when I was young. I just seem to do better under pressure. I think better. I enjoy it. But anyway, that's just a long, roundabout, long-winded thing to say. I really enjoyed this program tonight, and the highlight, and it's been cherry on top is with Gene coming in. No one can teach history like Gene, so I'm going to shut the hell up and go right back to my dear brother Gene, a.k.a. the Bitter Ender. Go ahead, Bitter Ender.
Well, thank you for the compliment, Eddie. I appreciate that. As a history teacher, there's no way I could get a job as a history teacher in a school today.
Oh, hell no.
I mean, even the private, church-sponsored schools, they're gone. They've gone as wacky liberal as some of the public schools. And so that's one reason I did teach for 14 years, and most of the time it was history. But I saw the handwriting on the wall that was coming, and they didn't want to teach history. They wanted propaganda. And so I said, you know, I'm getting tired of this nonsense. And when my brother offered me that job with that sports medicine program covering IndyCar racing, I said, you know, I'd like to have coached that football team and gotten it back on its feet. I went to a new school, coached there a couple of years, and we were getting better. And I would have liked to have coached there about 3 or 4 more years and really gotten that program on its feet. But I thought, you know, in 3 or 4 more years, Don will have somebody hired. They may not need anybody then. So if this is a chance to get out, it's a good chance to take it and never look back on it. I worked for my brother for 25 years and IndyCar racing. Then we did NASCAR about 5 years, but the last 13 years, I think, was American Le Mans Series, which is the sports cars and endurance racing, like 12 hours at Sebring, 10 hours road Atlanta. And that was interesting because most of those teams coming over here were Europeans, like Audi and Porsche and Ferrari. And it was really interesting to talk to them because you get a different perspective on things of the European viewpoint. And those drivers were so top-notch, first-class people.
Yes.
Just really the cream of the crop.
And did you ever meet Richard Petty? I'm sorry to interrupt you. I was going to ask you, did you ever meet Richard Petty?
Yeah. Did you ever meet? Super great guy. Funny. He could tell more funny stories. And I'll tell you one on him. He was talking about people asking, said, why do you stay around the racetrack so late after the race? I mean, most of the people are gone. And the team's packed up the car and they're ready to leave. He said, well, I'll stay as long as anybody wants an autograph because that's why I'm here. They're paying to see me. And I'm not going to shove them out of the way and say, well, I ain't got time for you. And they said, well, what have you, you know, how many things, different things, programs and stuff like that is have you signed? He said, I've never signed body parts. He said, that'll get you in trouble. I said, I won't do that. And they said, what's the craziest thing you've ever signed? He said, I signed a duck once. And somebody said, you mean like a decoy? He said, no, a duck. He said, we went over to this guy's house to buy some parts. This is back in the early days of NASCAR when without all the corporation garbage. We went over to this fellow's house to get some parts, and this fellow said, would you sign something for me? And he said, sure, I'd be glad to. He goes running down to a pond and grabs this duck by the neck and yanks it out of the water and brings it up there and said, would you sign this duck right here on his wing? And he held the duck's wing out. And so Richard Petty goes, Richard Petty, 43, on the duck's wing. And he said, that's the craziest thing I've ever signed right there. So
you know,
there are a lot of great stories.
So you know, I used to love Richard Petty. You know, he was one of my heroes back in my younger days. But I'm sure you know, his daddy Lee got in there ahead of him. You know, I know, I'll shut the hell up. But you know, the original NASCAR guys, they were a lot of them, probably if not most of them, were moonshiners, running moonshine.
Oh, yeah.
That's how they got their start.
Junior Johnson admitted that.
Yes.
In fact, I think he'd been arrested once or twice for running moonshine.
And they would get together and argue
about who had the best car, and then say, all right, Sunday afternoon, we'll go take it out in Bubba's field, and we'll just race them and see who's got the fastest car. So you're right, pretty much how it started. So, and that was back in the days before it was all corporation and, you know, woke and politically correct and all the garbage that they've done to NASCAR today.
They messed it up.
They honored the Confederate flag. It was like the Southern 500 at Darlington, and in the spring race was the Rebel 400. And I remember a lot of these drivers, after they won the race, instead of carrying a checkered flag in their car and making a lap around the track, they would carry a Confederate flag.
Sure.
David Pearson and a lot of them, they would drive a lap around the track after the race was over with a Confederate flag. So they were very proud of the Southern heritage back then. And then once big money started coming in from New York and California, no, we can't have that. We can't have that. So that's why I've never watched a NASCAR race since they put their politically correct stamp on it. So
I don't either.
Anyway. So anyhow,
sorry, that's
a little sidelight. We have another speech that I'd like to read to our audience. And I'm not going to take this apart line by line, but I will let them decide for themselves which is the better of the two speeches. This speech was written by General Robert E. Lee at the end of the war. And at the top of the page, it says Army of Northern Virginia, April 10th, 1865. And on April the 9th, 1865, Lee had met Grant at Appomattox, at the little village of Appomattox Courthouse in Southwest Virginia, and surrendered the main Confederate Army in the East, the Army of Northern Virginia, at the McLean House. And the interesting thing about the McLean House, Wilbur McLean had a house on what was originally the first the battlefield at the First Battle of Manassas. And a cannonball came through his house and lodged in the chimney in the kitchen. And he said, and Wilbur McLean can read a map as well as anybody, sitting right between Washington and Richmond, he figured battles are going to be fought back and forth across that land all the time. He sold the house, packed up his family, and moved way down to Southwest Virginia and got as far away from the war as he could. And then wound up, the war started in his front parlor or in his kitchen and ended in his front parlor, because that's where Lee and Grant met, in the front parlor of the McLean House to sign the surrender papers. So anyway, it's dated April 10th, the day after the surrender, 1865, and it's called General Order Number 9. But now it's come down to the to us today as Lee's farewell address. And let me give that to us, to our listening audience. After 4 years of arduous service, marked by unsurpassed courage and fortitude, the Army of Northern Virginia has been compelled to yield to overwhelming numbers and resources. I need not tell the survivors of so many hard-fought battles, who have remained steadfast to the last, that I have consented to this result through no mistrust of them. But feeling that valor and devotion could accomplish nothing that could compensate for the loss that must have attended to the continuance of the contest, I have determined to avoid the useless sacrifice of those whose past services have endeared them to their countrymen. You will take with you the satisfaction that proceeds from the consciousness of duty faithfully performed, and I earnestly pray that a merciful God will extend to you his blessing and protection. With an unceasing admiration of your constancy and devotion to your country, and a grateful remembrance of your kind and generous consideration for myself, I bid you an affectionate farewell. And it was signed R. E. Lee, General. So that, to me, has been one of the greatest pieces of writing in Southern history. It wasn't bitter. It wasn't saying about we were forced into a war by a rotten, corrupt government, which he could have said. It wasn't saying we need to seek vengeance against a brutal enemy that's attacked civilians, that had no qualms about attacking civilians and destroying their lives and their property and their homes, which had absolutely no military value at all. But this was a very sincere piece of writing directed to his men that had stayed with him for so many years. And probably by this time, most of them were barefoot, shoes had worn out. They were starving. They couldn't get food. They tried to go to Farmville and some of the places, and the Yankees had gotten there ahead of them and destroyed the railroad trains that they were hoping they were going to be able to get to feed the army. So you had this army made up of rags for uniforms, barefoot, many of them were starving, and trapped between the Federal infantry closing in behind them and the Federal cavalry out in front of them. Now, there were all sorts of options. A lot of them wanted to take the cavalry horses and cut the reins and take the horses, as bad off as the horses were, from the artillery and the wagons and head for the mountains and just continue a guerrilla warfare. And Lee was against that. He said, no, that would bring war to parts of the South where there hadn't been fighting before. And that would be a vengeance type of warfare. That guerrilla operations or partisan operations, they would go after anybody in the countryside and shoot them down on sight or destroy their homes or, once again, get into parts of the country that hadn't seen the war before and totally destroy the South. So there we have two speeches. I hope our listeners have enjoyed listening to them and learned a little bit about history, and the first speech a little bit about propaganda.
I'm sure they did. I always learn a lot, and I always enjoy it a whole lot. I really do. And I'd like to thank you so much. It's an honor to have you for a brother and a friend, Gene. And I know that everybody loves you. We get compliments about you all the time. Told you some of them. But I'm really, really grateful that we can be in this battle together, brother. And I look forward to being on again soon with us, with me, me and you together, buddy. Hopefully
thank
next
you.
Week.
Appreciate it. Yeah, appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Miss Lizzie, and thank you, dear Jay. I have to do something for Jay. He's so special. And thank you, Jason and Blood River Radio, family. Thank you so much. Good night, everybody.